Well, it is Saturday, September 1st, and that means it's time for another The Right Side podcast with me, Andrea, and as always, my co-host Kim. How are you?
I'm fantastic. It's September 1st, which kind of means fall is here, except not really where I live in the Deep South. I have to wait another 2 months, but I'm not bitter about that.
Yeah, see, it's still about a week ago. I noticed that the trees were changing already on the mountain up here in the Pacific. There's a hill behind the house that, you know, has a lot of maple trees and things like that and poplars and stuff. And it's been changing for a good 10 days already. So we're...
Oh, that sounds beautiful.
Yeah, it was 61 degrees the other day. it's definitely like fall weather. Like I saw you post on your, I don't know if your Instagram is private, but I don't know if listeners can follow it, but you posted the leggings that you bought the other day and you were like, no, I just have to wait for fall to start before I can wear them. I'm like, girl, I'm already wearing them.
Really, legitimately, the trees don't start changing down. Like you don't see the full color of fall until right around Thanksgiving.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Which is, you know, you're like well into fall.
Oh, yeah. It'll be the end of September is when you always want to go drive up to Mount Baker because there's just there's the Mount Baker Highway that just like you basically are like driving between a canopy of, you know, between evergreen trees, but also deciduous trees that are changing colors. And it's just really pretty. So we've got
beautiful.
That in about a month. But yeah, but we also have 6 months of rain that I don't look forward to. But what I also don't look forward to, and I don't know, people that are listening to this, I don't know if like, I would assume that most of the people that are listening, that listen to us, pay attention to the news and stuff like that. And I don't know if it's that I worked especially a lot compared to last month. I basically took the entire month of July off. But this month I did a lot more, like, you know, writing about news and politics and stuff like that. And just like paying attention in general. And we have Kavanaugh's hearings were set, what, the end of July? They announced that they would be starting this coming week. And
yes.
It has just been the hair on fire. Oh, my goodness. This is the end of women's rights as we know it.
We're going to die. All of us will die.
Alyssa Milano literally in, you know, we joke about the handmaids, but she actually put on a handmaid's outfit and
oh my gosh,
posted it on social media.
I mean, I wanted to get that outfit for Halloween just as a joke, but it's not even, I can't even do it anymore. It's not even funny anymore.
No, people would think that you were actually making a political statement.
I mean, I should drag my child along and say, here's what happens. If you vote for Republicans, I have to wear this outfit and I have to have a child.
Yeah. that would be perfect.
Oh. But yeah, the hearings start on Tuesday, which, you know, right after Labor Day, after the long weekend, everyone will be all rested and everything and ready for the crazy hearings. And I think when Chuck Grassley announced them, he said they're going to be 2 to 3 days, 3 to 4 days of hearings, whatever. But yeah, that starts on Tuesday. So that should be an interesting news week because of that. But I was laughing because of, like you said, the hair on fire reactions to what's coming. And there are two articles I saw this week that, I mean, articles is kind of a loose term, but, you know, just kind of propaganda to keep people from being interested in Kavanaugh and thinking he's a good idea or something. The first one, which is really ridiculous. I mean, the second one is kind of, they're trying to tie him to something substantial, but the first one was so dumb. From the AP, I saw it flash across my newsfeed this week on Twitter, and it talks about how at Yale, Kavanaugh stayed out of debates many times and instead focused on ready people. He focused on playing basketball.
How dare he?
He seemed more interested in playing basketball than debating with fellow students at Yale Law. And so here's just, you know, just the beginning of it. It was the 1980s at Yale University, and Brett Kavanaugh's classmates were protesting South Africa's apartheid system, rallying for gay rights, and backing dining hall workers in a labor dispute. But friends and acquaintances say the future Supreme Court nominee seemed more interested in battles on the basketball court than politically charged debates. And it goes on from there, you know, saying that people who knew him at the time never would have thought he would have been a Supreme Court nominee because he didn't seem very interested in certain things when he was on campus. And one of the things was he was focused on basketball more than debates outside of the classroom. Now, obviously, this is a very stupid article, but some people who already dislike Kavanaugh look at it and say, well, he doesn't have like his priorities in order. I'm pretty concerned about that. But people, for me especially, I think that's a vote in his favor because I prefer basketball to any other sport. So yeah. I see that and I'm like, yeah, they should, you know, vote for him. But still, it's a stupid article.
I was just gonna, that same article also went on to like knock him for joining the Greek system when the Greek system was waning. Like that's some kind of like, you know, it's like he was just kind of a guy's guy in college. Like I know plenty of guys like that.
Yeah, exactly. It said that he was joining the, quote, party hardy fraternity, and then he was involved in a group that had kind of private social gatherings, but they were very, you know, like, focused on, you know, just men hanging out with men and everything, as if that means he hates women and is going to oppress them with some sort of ruling when he gets on the Supreme Court about how abortion is bad. I don't know. It's a weird connection. It's a crazy like shot in the dark to try to pin something on him. But I mean, I thought that was dumb. But then on ABC News, of course, ABC, let's, you know, totally trust what they say. But the piece was called, the title, Kavanaugh's Ties to Disgraced Mentor Loom Over Confirmation. Now, I hadn't heard about this until this week, just I think just a few days ago it came out. Yeah, August 29th. But he's talking about how one of his former colleagues, essentially, one of his mentors, I should say, Judge Alex Kaczynski of the Ninth U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals, et cetera, he has been charged with sexual misconduct, including touching, inappropriate comments, and forced viewings of pornography in his chambers. Obviously a problem. This guy shouldn't be a judge right now. Obviously, he has some issues with dealing with female colleagues and those, you know, subordinates. And he clearly has a problem that shouldn't be, you know, he shouldn't be in a position of power. He shouldn't be a judge, whatever. But further on, you have to dig down into the article. It says, so far, no evidence has surfaced to suggest that Kavanaugh had any knowledge of Kaczynski's alleged misconduct, which includes one groping accusations from 1986 and many more claims of inappropriate behavior in recent years. So there's absolutely no evidence, no connection to Kaczynski and Kavanaugh. Kavanaugh said he, you know, had no idea it had occurred. Obviously, he would have had a problem with it if he knew about it. But the title of the article and the meat of the article really suggest that he's connected to this person who has questionable character, and therefore, by way of, I don't know, some sort of little connection, he is supposedly a person of questionable character as well, even though there's no connection. And this happened when Kavanaugh was not obviously in attendance, didn't know about it, whatever. So those are just kind of, that's like the flavor of articles and reactions from the mainstream media that we've been seeing. And it just points to the fact that they are freaked out that this guy is going to get nominated. Well, not nominated, that he's confirmed. Going to get confirmed. Yeah. Yes.
And he will.
He will, for sure.
Yeah, I think that the next week is going to be very, you know, hair on. I'm gonna watch the hearings, but I'm gonna like, you know, it's gonna be hard to kind of like force myself to watch some of the commentary, and I'll probably like do it in small snippets. But yeah, the amount of like I'm sure the Morning Joe and, you know, crowd and the you know, New Day people are gonna just be, and then of course on the flip side, you know, the Fox News will be doing their thing, and you know, it's just going to be a complete and utter. And of course, you know, the majority of Americans aren't even paying attention to this stuff.
No, I mean, I'm looking forward to the hearings because I kind of like that, you know, sort of thing, as kind of twisted as that is. But one thing that I think we've talked about maybe off of the podcast as well is that even though, you know, we're pretty sure he's going to be confirmed and everything, if you look at the issue that people are most concerned about with, which is abortion and access to contraception, I personally don't think that's going to change when he gets on the court. I don't think there's going to be anything in the near future, or maybe, you know, next few years about it. It would take a lot to get to the point to where any kind of ruling affects the abortion laws in the U.S. and then contraception. Who's trying to keep women access from contraception? It's not happening.
Yeah, and I don't unless, you know, you're very devout Catholic and don't believe in, you know, anything other than like the rhythm method, I don't know who's arguing against you know, women having, you know, contraception. I honestly, like, I've never met someone like that in my life. No. But like you were saying about the Supreme Court, it would take a long time for legislation for court rulings that are being, you know, brought to the appellate courts and go, you know, they have to go, you know, something like that before. And then they would have to get all the way up to where it was being appealed to the Supreme Court. And then the court would have to decide to take on the issue. And like we saw with, like, exactly, the Christian Baker in Colorado, even when they do take on these big scope issues, they then still kind of narrowly rule on just a specific of the actual, you know, they don't seem to be taking on big issues unless it's, you know, things like, oh yes, you know, Obamacare is a tax, not a fee, you know, kind of right. thing. Like they, right. unless they're going to be doing things like that, which are just, you know, kind of like utterly devastating, at the time.
Yeah. So I think the people that are the pro aborts, who think that everything is going to end once he gets on the court are wrong. And people, you know, like ourselves who are pro-life and would love to see things change, if we're going to be honest, it most likely will not happen. And if it does, it's going to be far into the future, I believe. And it's going to be narrow in scope, as we've talked about. So everyone thinks everything is going to change, and that's not reality.
Now, on the other side of the media, and I don't know if you have anything else you want to say about Kavanaugh, but I was just going to say on the flip side, we have the savior that's here once again to save us all in the form of Texas Representative Robert Francis, also known as Beto O'Rourke.
Or you can just call him Beta.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, they do that too. No, I mean, the fawning and actually, you know, this is, you know, it's very Texas oriented. Of course, you know, Texas politics seem to permeate, you know, like there's a few states that, you know, kind of California, New York, and Texas are definitely, you know, state politics that seem to always transcend state politics and go into the national. And the national news, even like non-politic publications like Town and Country and Vanity Fair. Vanity Fair's gotten more into politics. I don't know about their history with it, but they were always kind of just more like a fashion lifestyle magazine. But they have definitely waded into the political waters more, especially on behalf, and of course, you know, not surprising for Democrats and progressives and you know, well, the illiberal left. But, you know, kind of things that Beto, they had about a month and a half ago, Town and Country had this magazine spread, Who is Beto O'Rourke? And just kind of like talking about all these, you know, how he's this upstart and he's young and handsome and looks like a Kennedy. And, you know, I mean, it is like, gosh, the Kennedy references are just like, yes, he is. And, you know, they talk about how he was, you know, he was in a punk band and he skateboards, and he even plays up that thing. You know, he goes and skateboards around, you know, parking lots and stuff like that, obviously for photo ops and things like that. And then Vanity Fair just had an article that has him already. I should have pulled this up before we started talking about it, but it had him already saying underneath the title, it was, you know, this guy's president is, could this guy be presidential material in 2020, even if he loses, you know, which I think that's the other thing that I think that people's Texans, especially, and well, not Texans, I think Texans know better, but I think people outside of Texas, see the polls that have come out where the gap has gone to less than 1% or just at 1% between Ted Cruz and Beto O'Rourke, and they get their hopes up, just like with Wendy Davis. Mm-hmm. They get their hopes up, and then, and you know, they talk about, you know, the poll that was done was among registered voters, not likely voters, which always tends to, you know, go, but at the same time, and I say this to everyone who talks, oh, it's skewed, the polls are skewed, they're talking about registered voters, and those always skew to Democrat. It's like, but Greg Abbott, with the same group of people, Greg Abbott is up by like 18 points against Lupe Valdez. Now, the thing that they also, that we've kind of learned also about Beto is that yesterday it came out, or I think the Houston Chronicle the day before yesterday came out and realized that when he has had this DWI that he, in 1998, he was 26 years old, you know, was driving at a high rate of speed and hit a truck. But it came out yesterday or the day before. I think National Review had a big article about it, that he tried to leave the scene. And the only reason he did it is because another motorist stopped him from leaving, which is pretty bad. And I ended up writing about it, and I just kind of made like one, it was a pretty short post. I was just kind of like saying, you know, what the news was, but that is like the ultimate, like, mark against someone's character is that, look, mm-hmm. you got behind the wheel after, and he blew like almost twice I think the legal limit now, but it was a point one was the legal limit back in 1998. So he blew like a .134 and a .136. He blew twice on two different police car officers' breathalyzers. So there were two readings, but it's the ultimate mark against, at least to me, against someone's character, that you not only did that, but then you tried to avoid the consequences by leaving, you know, and no one was seriously injured in that wreck, which is why it was expunged from his record. I mean, from being an actual, like, you know, he went through a program, so that it was ultimately the charges were dropped. But at the same time, it's like, and I get it. We have, you know, George W. Bush had problems with alcohol and things like that when he was younger. So I get it. We have flawed people in office, but don't, you know, the fact that they pretty much did not talk about, other than the Houston Chronicle, bringing this up, like, it was conservative media that kind of like said, like, oh, hey, this guy, all, you know, if this was a Republican, you guys would be freaking out, you know. And it's only by mm-hmm. by Ted Cruz's kind of, you know, squeaky clean pass that he's not being excoriated for things like that. And that's the thing that I think that keeps on happening with Ted Cruz, is he's just so unlikable. And he really, you know, he was kind of the holdout against Donald Trump. Well, he's so unlikable just in his like affect, you know, in the way that he yes. kind of talks, and but he's very intelligent. Now that's the other thing, you know, people keep on, you know, saying like, oh, well, the O'Rourke campaign keeps on saying, oh, you know, Ted Cruz doesn't want to debate us, he wants everything on his terms. And it's like, dude, you called for the debates. Ted Cruz said okay, then and came back and said, here, we'll do five at these places. You came back and said, no, I want one on my home turf in El Paso. Ted Cruz said fine, and you still and they were supposed to have debated. The first debate was supposed to have taken place last night, and O'Rourke campaign said no. And you have to sit there and think, like, Beto cannot. You do not beat the guy at debates who has the Harvard Debate Award named after him. All of Ted Cruz's, you know, faults, he's no slouch when it comes to having put in the hours and has the talent to just crush people at that kind of thing. So
right, exactly. And I'm not a Texan or anything, but I highly doubt that Beto will beat Ted Cruz. I mean, we'll see what happens. Stranger things have occurred, but yeah, it's kind of interesting to me that especially the Democratic Party, whether someone is kind of running, like, well, like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, she's running for the House of Representatives. And obviously she, if she wins, which she might, she would kind of get lost in the mix of, you know, all these people. Of course, the Senate, fewer people, and so the spotlight is on them a little bit more. But it seems to me the Democratic Party is really thirsty for a fresh young face to kind of take the reins after we've had, you know, the Clinton era, and, you know, Obama's did his two terms, and, you know, all these people are gone.
Yeah.
But it seems to me they're trying to find someone to, you know, take that mantle and carry it forward, even if they're questionable, even if they don't have much experience or anything, if they focus on, you know, their democratic socialist, like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. But as far as O'Rourke's past with his record and that being expunged and everything, I only just saw that, I think last night, that had even happened. I hadn't even heard about it otherwise. And you're correct that does speak a lot to his character. And I would hope he would have learned from that. I'm sure he's learned a lot since then. Mm-hmm. But it does say a lot about who he is. And even when Ted Kennedy was alive and well after he's passed away, we've always brought up what happened in Chappaquiddick with Mary Jo Kopechne and leaving the scene of a crime. Now, obviously, no one was hurt with the O'Rourke incident, but when something occurs that's wrong and you know you have had a hand in it and that you've caused a problem, no matter what it is, if you're in, you know, part of a famous family, if you're wanting to get elected, you know, in the future, if you're just, you know, some 20-something-year-old kid, obviously you need to stay there and take care of it, no matter what that means for your future. And like you said, that does say something about his character. And I was just thinking about this yesterday, just in terms of people's past, when they're in the public eye, people's past and what they've done and haven't done and everything. I don't know how much grace we apply to people, and this is a good question in terms of Donald Trump too. How much grace should we apply to public officials and politicians when they have questionable things that they've done in their past? Do we extend grace to them and allow them, I don't know, second and third and maybe fourth chances? When does that end? Should we always keep that in the back of our mind as we discuss them? I don't know. I think it's something worthy of, you know, consideration, but I'm not sure what your thoughts are on
that. I think specifically in the case of Donald Trump, and he is worth talking about specifically, is that he's never apologized for anything that he's done publicly or necessarily that I think he's ever, you know, done it privately. It's like we all kind of went after, you know, Bill Clinton when he was going around on his book tour with the poor James Patterson, you know, and the Me Too stuff was getting brought up, that, you know, that he never apologized to any of the, you know, oh goodness, I can't think of what her name, Juanita Broderick, I'm blanking on all these people's names. Monica Lewinsky.
Paula Jones.
I'm not sure that necessarily, like, Monica Lewinsky has been her own, like, public face. Like, she's still, like, I think, you know, likes him in some way. Like, she blames her problems not on, you know, Bill Clinton, but on Matt Drudge, you know?
Yeah.
And she kind of goes around talking about how she was the first victim of cyberbullying, which she probably was, you know, but at the same time, you were doing stuff with the president in the Oval Office. Like, why wouldn't they go after, you know, it's like you kind of put yourself into a position.
And you can't blame all of that on youth, whether it's Monica Lewinsky or Beto O'Rourke. There's things we know that are wrong and that we shouldn't do. And it doesn't matter how young you are. You know what's right and wrong.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I think that, you know, there used to be a standard, you know, for kind of like coming out and apologizing for things. Mark Sanford being a good example of that.
Yeah.
But with Donald Trump, it seems like, and even Roy Moore, it seems like these things, the standard now is just don't apologize. Just say fake news. And then say, I did it.
Yeah. Yeah. And we need more Republicans in office. So it doesn't matter. Like David Horowitz said of Roy Moore, well, I think he's guilty, but it happened a while ago and we need a Republican in the Senate.
And we didn't get one.
No. No.
The state of Alabama, deep, deep red Alabama, has a Democrat senator. I do think, just to kind of put a bow on the Ted Cruz, Beto O'Rourke thing, I do think that Ted Cruz, when people are answering poll questions, his favorability is really low. And I think that people in the polls probably just, you know, say that. You know, the thing about Beto is that he is a likable character. The one thing that I think will be Ted Cruz's saving grace, I think on his own, when likely voters are actually voting, he pulls it up a few percentage points just on his own. But also with Greg Abbott being so far ahead of Lupe Valdez. And as we know, voters rarely split their tickets. So I think I think Ted Cruz will probably end up winning by probably close to double digits, if not straight up, you know, over 10 points. So, I mean, that's just how, and I'm not one of those deniers that says, like, you know, oh, Texas is going to be red forever. Places change, you know. Right. Washington State used to not be as deep blue as it is now. Of course, Eastern Washington is completely different than Western Washington too. So that's, so everybody that wants to, you know, reply to this, to comment on this podcast and me talking about Ted Cruz, I'm not saying he's going to lose. So don't at me. But going on to, you know, where Ted Cruz works and where Beto O'Rourke works, they have hearings coming up, more hearings than just the Kavanaugh hearing. Of course, that's for the Judiciary Committee. You have been kind of paying attention, and I have not been paying attention to this nearly as much. I know I have like kind of a transitory knowledge of what's been happening, but Jack Dorsey of Twitter is going.
Yes. Yes, the next week should be really fun when it comes to social media and people talking about what's happening on Capitol Hill. As we said, September 4th is when the Kavanaugh hearings begin. But on September 5th, Jack Dorsey, along with other tech giants and representatives and everything, they will be appearing before the House Energy and Commerce Committee to discuss, let me pull it up, media bias against conservatives on social media, content monitoring, the algorithms that these companies use and everything. So that will be a very interesting kind of, I don't know if you want to call it a hearing, just kind of a, just appearing before them and talking about what's going on. And to me, I'm kind of split on this because I do see the obvious bias that these tech companies have. Twitter leans left. Jack Dorsey has said that. Facebook leans left. This isn't surprising. We know this happens. We know that some sites have been completely shut down just because they lean conservative. There's people's reach has been kind of stifled because they're conservatives on, you know, a bunch of platforms, not just Twitter. But the fact that he's testifying before Republicans, and Kevin McCarthy said, quote, one-sided conversations are an affront to the public mission that serves as a foundation for these social media platforms, including Twitter. That is why I worked with Chairman Greg Walden and requested Jack Dorsey to testify to Congress and talk with the American people about filtering practices on Twitter. And like I said, I'm kind of torn on this because if we're, as conservatives, if we are for businesses to make their own decisions, if I'm for Jack Phillips, the ability to create whatever cake he wishes and to turn away clients if he has an objection to that, why should I not be for tech companies, even as big and as mainstream as they are? Why shouldn't I be for them and their ability to have their own guidelines when it comes to content and stuff? And I obviously see the bias. I see that all the time. I know people get suspended from Twitter for the smallest things. I see people who do horrible things and make violent threats either not get suspended or it takes a while for them to be addressed. And I understand that. But should we really be questioning tech companies for how they lean and what guidelines they have? Is this an area we want to get into? Will we be bringing other business leaders to Capitol Hill to talk about their bias? I don't know if it's necessarily a path that we should go down. I don't know what kind of conclusion will be reached on Wednesday after they have this kind of hearing. So I would love to hear your thoughts on it, Andrea.
Well, I just, my big thing is like especially with even things like net neutrality, California apparently went against the, you know, Ajit Pai and the FCC and implemented some pretty strict net neutrality rules, but Jerry Brown will have to either sign it or let it sit, or veto it for it not to go through. But you know, it's one of those things where it's like when people start talking about Facebook and Google and Amazon being basically regulated like public utilities, it really does kind of, we're entering into this kind of weird yes. place that we don't know. It's like people say, the internet is the wild, wild west still. You know, we are in this whole new, and I don't see how it's going to be a fine line when you start putting in net neutrality rules and regulating things like Facebook and stuff like that. You kind of lose what has always been. And like you said, you are dealing with private companies. Now, mm-hmm. does that mean that are we going to do what we did to the telecom industry and call that a public utility, you know, because places, people like, or companies like Comcast and Xfinity, I don't even remember what it's called, and Time Warner, they've laid, you know, fiber optic cables down throughout. It's kind of like how the railroads, you know, private companies laid the railroad tracks in America, and the railroad has immense, power in it when it comes to government and right of ways and things like that. Like you are basically dealing with a whole new entity when you're talking about the railroad. They have special exemptions going all the way back like for 150 years practically, because the private you know, captains of industry got these special concessions to lay down, you know, railroad tracks. Well, what are the new railroad tracks? It's fiber optic cables and yeah. things like that, and telecom, like, you know, cell phone companies, LTE, you know, they're talking about the 5G, you know, making that like a public utility of some kind. I need to read up on that better because I just heard it in passing about what they were talking about doing with that. But I mean, it is. I don't think Congress has any answers. I think that's why they're having these people in to talk. I think, and I don't think that I have any answers either, other than to be a bystander and say, like, look, I see the benefit and the drawbacks of these companies kind of being able to, you know, take hold of the internet, say, we are the provider of your internet. We can make special deals with certain companies like Netflix for streaming because they use more data than other websites. I'm up in the air on having really kind of like any answer other than or opinion, really, other than I think, you know, it's the one place that you can have, you know, your freedom to express your thoughts. And I think that especially when we're talking about when Jack Dorsey does go out there and, you know, he's been on the media rounds and saying, like, look, we understand that we do kind of, you know, tend to be left leaning, which, you know, tech people just are, right, for whatever reason. But and those could be discussed as well, because I think probably most tech people, they're very socially liberal, but they actually are kind of more libertarian, and they don't want, you know, a bunch of, unless you are Google or you are Facebook or Alphabet, which is Google's parent company now, you know, you those people probably want to slam the door, you know, but after they've, you know, gotten so big. But but it is kind of one of those things that I don't think you should be, you know, putting a bunch of government regulations on the stuff. I think that it ultimately comes down to, and you know me with social contract type things, it is a civility, it is a, like, kind of a, it shows where our society, I guess, is, lean, you know, kind of like eschewing the Enlightenment. You know, I mean, we're 300 years away from it, and it seems to be coming back around to, you know, people don't know, you know, that there's things called, you know, the head of Whole Foods wrote a book called Conscious Capitalism, basically re-upping, you know, the theory of moral sentiments. You know, it's old stuff coming back around again, but it seems like we've lost, we're gonna start losing a lot of the things that we learned about, you know, liberalism, like as in the 18th century sense of the word. Right. That we're losing a lot of what, and going back to a, you know, you can't say that, you can't do that. I mean, the whole thing with, at some point we should have, Jay Caruso's really into the whole like vaping thing. Now, he doesn't vape, but just the regulations on vaping, you know, I mean, we've already gotten rid of cigarettes. And now it's like, at some point people have to decide if you are smoking a cigarette at this time in history, you know exactly what you're doing. You're not, you know, and now, you know, it's like, we've had alcohol studies for generations and generations, and do we know more about alcohol than ever before? And yet what happens year over year? People are buying more and more and more of it. You know, they constantly talk about, you know, millennials are drinking tons and tons more wine than previous generations, you know, kind of thing. And they're drinking at home and all this stuff. And it's just kind of like, okay, but they know the risks. They go through school. They're taught this in health class. You're inundated, kind of, if you ever watch MTV, which I do for a couple shows that I've watched for a decade now, but like Catfish and Teen Mom, but I only ever watched that channel for those shows, and so I only see, but when I see the commercials that are on those channels, I'm like, holy cow, these kids are like being like propagandized, especially about global warming and things like that.
Oh yes, it is insane.
Yeah, and anyways, but I'm always just a little bit amazed by. But that's my two cents. I really don't think I went anywhere with that.
No, I think you're right. And I, again, as a conservative, I mean, as conservatives, we understand the frustration when we kind of feel that we're being stifled. But like you said, do we want these private companies to be regulated? Do I want the president to tweet about how the Trump White House won't let things like this happen? I mean, do we want that? Should we address that? I mean, we know Silicon Valley is run by the left, and it most likely will always be run by the left. Keira Davis at Red State a few months ago, I loved it. She wrote a piece that she said, we don't need more pundits like Tommy Lahren, because of course we don't, but we need more James Damores, you know, from Google. We need need more conservatives, people, even people just in the center who prize freedom, you know, and liberty. We need more of those people in the tech world. We need fewer people telling us their opinions online and more people involved in like the nuts and the bolts behind Twitter and behind Facebook so they can have some sort of, you know, influence on these things. And I, like you said, I don't know if anything will come of what happens on Wednesday. I think this is just kind of a train that continues to, as we're talking about trains, this is a train that continues to just go down the hill and pick up steam. And people are frustrated that they feel that they don't really have a voice like others do, and just based on their political opinions. Now, I will say, as far as content monitoring, that's one thing. But I think we can all agree on the fact that those who make threats or, you know, harass others, they should be dealt with no matter their political opinions. And this came to light yesterday, just a horrible thing for someone to do on Twitter, which that happens a lot. Someone just, this is despicable. They took the picture of Meghan McCain as she was standing over her father's casket. And I'm sure you've seen that picture. A lot of other people have too. Mm-hmm. And she's crying because she lost her dad. She didn't lose, you know, the politician that we all know. She lost her father, the one who's been there, you know, for her whole life, who she was very close to. And someone on Twitter took that picture, and then they photoshopped at the bottom right, they photoshopped two hands holding a gun, pointing it at her as she is crying over her father's casket. And in their little comment, they said, "America, this one's for you."
Yeah.
And they tagged Meghan McCain in that. And Ben Dominic, who is married to Meghan, he had a whole thing on that yesterday because it had been reported hundreds of times and Twitter hadn't done anything to it. And he tagged Jack, the guy that's going to be, you know, on Capitol Hill. You know, he basically said, "What does it take for this to be addressed?" Mm-hmm. And it took several hours and this account was suspended, thankfully, and I reported it too. But if we don't even take care of just the basics like that, then how can we, you know, focus on the content, just the very neutral political content that's on there? I mean, if they can't even address the simple things, how can we trust them to do the other?
Yeah, I mean, it reminds me of when Glenn Reynolds, who is Instapundit, was his account was suspended because he said "run them down" or something like that when people were protesting out in the highway or the road or whatever, and not letting, you know, motorists pass. And that's all he said. And he was suspended almost immediately. And this took hours. And I believe the reason why the tweet went dark as soon as it did had nothing to do with Twitter. It had to do with the guy who was being inundated with, you know, comments and like how disgusting and stuff like that. He set his account to private. That's how it originally got taken down.
Yeah.
And then he got suspended. But yeah, you know, it's like they're quick on the draw with, you know, an attorney and well-known writer, Glenn Reynolds, right, who, you know, writes, I think the last thing I saw, I can't remember what publication. I mean, but places like, you know, the Wall Street Journal and the Weekly Standard and USA Today. Like, he's not like a, you know, I mean, he kind of tends to be Trumpy, but he, you know, he's not like, you know, some kind of like Alex Jones radical kind of thing.
And even, I mean, just me, and I have, you know, a very minuscule following compared to like these big name people, Meghan McCain and everything. And it's not like the biggest deal in the world, but a few months ago, someone who didn't like what I said held up a picture of a knife. And they had a bandana on their face. They took a selfie of them holding the knife and commented on my tweet. They didn't like it. And I reported, I'm reading it the wrong way, but a little bit threatening. And I received an email from Twitter saying, quote, "Some tweets, when viewed by themselves, seem threatening, but if you connect them to the larger context, there's nothing wrong with them," essentially. And I was like, "Are you, can't you just suspend this guy or demand that he remove this tweet?" Now, I thought it was a very common sense thing to do. If someone's holding a knife and takes a selfie just because they don't like my political opinions, shouldn't we address something like that? But no, it was my fault because I didn't look at the whole context, Andrea.
At the other end of that, and I know I bring this up, but again, it's one of those things where society has to, and has to monitor that stuff, not companies, but at the same time, but on the flip side, and this is where you get really sticky, on the flip side is that these types of things can happen and people lose their jobs.
Yes.
And their livelihoods there. I mean, we're now seeing, like, you know, I felt kind of, you know, I mean, yeah, maybe, you know, if I get flack for this, whatever, but I felt kind of bad that, you know, Louis C.K. goes and pays $10,000 to get on stage at the Comedy Cellar because he's a comedian and that's his livelihood. And he had embarrassed. Yes, he, you know, got he you know, did some really creepy, weird stuff that was horrifically embarrassing for him, mm-hmm. I'm sure. He, you know, has been removed from the public space for pretty much 9 months to almost a year. It was probably almost a year ago now. And you know, people kind of, and other comedians that are coming out kind of defending him, like saying, like, how long is your sentence basically for stuff like this, you know?
Great question.
Yeah, I mean, but that's the one thing that, you know, you kind of sit there and go, like, okay, we want people to monitor, we want society to monitor itself, you know, kind of thing. Like, oh, you don't say certain things. There's the word taboo for a reason, you know. And I think that we do talk about things more. I'm definitely not one of those people that doesn't talk about uncomfortable things. I probably, you know, am more of a TMI person when it comes to that kind of stuff. But
and I love confrontation, so, you know, I talk about it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't do confrontation, but I love talking about, like, you know, just like, you know, I'm never shy about talking about things that used to be taboo, like, and that the reason why I talk about it, like mental illness and eating disorders and things like that, which eating disorders a lot of times are it's a very private, secretive thing because you're ashamed a lot of times about it. But, you know, trust me, I'm not, like, you know, one of those people that wants people's words to be monitored. But I do think, you know, when you get to ad hominem attacks, you know, and threatening people, you know, it crosses a line that we should. But when it comes to In-N-Out, you know, donating some money to the Republican Party, which, you know, Google did too. These companies, it's like Donald Trump, you know, always said, you know, people would point out, which Donald Trump was a lifelong Democrat, when people would point out, you know, that he donated to Democrats and when he was a Democrat, he donated to Republicans. That's just how business, as sad as it is to, like, kind of know, but, like, just understand human nature, that's how business and government works together. It's kind of symbiotic relationship between businesses donating to campaigns to either get, you know, on a candidate's radar, get special favors, which, you know, there's laws for that, you know, get, whether they get enforced or not is up in the, you know, a lot of times they don't, but there's also just kind of like, there's lobbyists for a reason. As much as we hate it, you know, K Street exists because it works. I mean, it works in a way, you know. And, but especially when government is you know, interested in you know, their job is basically to regulate. But that's the thing, is that should companies be dinged? Should people lose their jobs? You know, you go all the way back to the girl who flew to South Africa, you know, and just, you know, tweeting something as stupid as what she tweeted. You know, we've all said stupid. I think you agree. Like, I'm so glad social media was not around when I was younger. Like,
oh, MySpace, yes, I can't was imagine, like, imagine that.
Yeah. But that was the other thing I was going to bring up. You know, when we're talking about, oh, should these things be regulated? And, you know, we're kind of, you know, Facebook kind of, and Twitter both learned big lessons from 2016. Look, in 2016, Twitter was 10 years old. They still have not figured out how to become, like, a real profitable business model. Yeah. And Facebook, you know, is what it is, because they, you know, what's his name? The guy from Facebook.
Mark Zuckerberg.
Yes. Thank you. Yes. I'm horrible with remembering names. Gosh. You know, he had that one exchange, can't remember with what senator, when he was on Capitol Hill, about the advertising. And they were like, oh, he doesn't understand, you know, advertising on Facebook. It's like, no, he did understand. He wanted Mark Zuckerberg to admit to it, that they sell, the only way that they make money is that they sell ads.
Yeah.
So, but again, like I said, these things are so new, and yet we're kind of running headlong into it. It's like, you know, it took a while for, you know, road safety measures to, you know, come into play. We have, you know, drunk driving laws, we have seatbelts, we have regulations on cars and babies, you know, being carried in arms versus in a car seat, you know, strapped down. I remember when I took my daughter home the first time, I had the, you know, like I wanted her to be comfortable. So I didn't have like, you know, the ties like really tight on her for the harness, you know, and the nurse comes in and looks at, she's like, no, you've got to do that way tighter. I'm like, but she's just a tiny little thing. You know? But I did it. And it's one of those things you kind of learn, you know, but at the same time, when cars were less than, you know, when cars were, you know, only had only been in existence for 50 years, people were still carrying their babies in their arms in the car. You know, 4-year-olds were not, you know, buckled down in the back seat. You know, you kind of slowly work your way up to, okay, what kind of regulations or what kind of, and this is totally, cars is totally different than the internet, because you're dealing with not a physical, if or in the most cases, not a physical threat that you can actually, like, you know, put statistics down to. This is perceived harm, right? Mm-hmm. And the fact that you don't have the right to not be offended, and you, and yes, bad thing, people say bad things, but if they say bad things, does that necessarily mean that they're going to act on them? You know, but you also don't have a right to, you know, threaten to kill someone or harm someone. And I think that those are the good, you know, and those are the long lasting, and the oldest, requirements for Twitter, is that you kind of behave in a way that isn't actual threats.
Yes.
But at the same time, I think there's a lot of, I think Twitter and social media and Facebook 50 years from now will be something, they'll be like, you were, people did what online, you know, kind of thing. So,
yeah, it's a vast, wild, open frontier. And we're just at the very beginning of it. It does seem like social media has been around forever, but still, I mean, we're in the infancy of this all.
Yeah. Kim, did you have a camera? Did you have a phone with a camera when you were in college? I didn't. I remember thinking
about No, I think I just had one of the little, like, Samsung. You pull the antenna up. Yeah, I didn't have a flip phone until after college. And the first, like, cool phone I had after college was still the one where you had to push the buttons before you could get to the letter you wanted when you were texting. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was like, that seems like such a long time ago.
That's
now.
Why texting was such a chore. Young people, that's why they didn't text that much, was because you had to press 4 buttons before you got to the letter.
Yeah, to say hi. My gosh, it was an ordeal. That's why we actually talked on the phone.
Yeah. Who knew we didn't actually want to talk on the phone? It was just the small barrier between the keyboard and the, because nowadays calling someone on the phone, I would never, like, as friendly as we are, like, I would never, like, I think I've picked up the phone and called you because I was driving one time and it was something like I needed an answer on really, really quickly. One time.
I know. It's so funny how we do it now.
Yeah. It's like, and I think if I recall, like, you were kind of weirded out, like, hello?
Yeah, because I guess now when people call, no matter if it's friends, family, acquaintances, or anything, you're like, is this an emergency? You're actually, I hear your voice instead of reading the words.
Yeah, why can't you text me? Oh, there's voice to text. I hate voice to text.
Oh, it's always bad, yes.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so I guess we're at 47. We're almost at 50 minutes. Do you want to wrap up, or do you want to cover our short little things that we can just talk, do short soliloquies on really quick? What do you want to do?
We could do the short things really quick.
Okay. So you want to go ahead and you can do yours first.
I do. I love this story this week. I saw this on Fox News, and I'm sure it was everywhere else, but I saw this headline, and it was, Maine officials deny PETA request to erect gravestone in memory of lobsters who died in truck crash. Aww, now, I mean, lobsters. Don't get me wrong. I'm not for animal cruelty. I'm totally not. I have my own issues with eating protein, but that's beside the point. That's not feelings-based. That's just, you know, revulsion and vomiting that might occur. But the Maine officials, like I said, they deny this request from PETA to put this gravestone because there were, let's see, 7,000 pounds of live lobsters were destroyed, and it's suspected that more than 4,500 lobsters died. And they want to put a gravestone on the side of the road after the crash. Now, I can't even handle how hilarious that is, because isn't that just like the most 2018 headline you've ever heard? And obviously, human life is much more important, and lobsters are eaten every day by people who love delicious seafood. And it just struck me as hilarious because of PETA's obsession with that and the desire to market with this stone so people in the future can realize that this is where lobsters died. It was so funny to
Oh, man. You know, sometimes things just happen. It's like when the bees, when the bee truck, you know, whenever the bee trucks fall over, they're like, oh, the bees. which I know there's been like a bee like shortage or whatever. Yeah, but I know. I'm probably is probably going to get comments like
you're going to get letters.
Yeah. You're being too flippant. They're very important. Let me discuss. Let me tell you about how important bees are to everything in your entire life. I'm like, I know. It's like how Laura Loomer made another nastiness about John McCain was she said that she was, you know, that she was having trouble with her eyes, and she, you know, since she's colorblind, she couldn't like tell if it was an ISIS flag or an American flag draped over John McCain's casket. And it was like I know that she was like being facetious or whatever, but being a woman and claiming to be color, so I made some comment about how like it takes a lot of temerity to say that you're colorblind, and a lot of like non-education about science and genetics, and I like, I know that women can be colorblind. It is extremely rare, because you have to have both of your parents have to have the colorblind gene and be colorblind. And so it's like, it's this very like, it's like hemophilia, you know? Anyways, yes. So, but someone came back to me and said like, women can be colorblind. I'm like, I know. The chances of Laura Loomer being colorblind is like almost zero. So anyways, but so my story really quick is a tweet that I tweeted out late at night, 11:51 p.m. I was way up past my bedtime. I saw this thing about Cosmo, the UK edition, had Tessa Holliday, who is she's morbidly obese. I've been almost that heavy before in my life, probably not as, but my highest weight when I was 21 was 294 pounds, and I'm 5'9". So I was, you know, I was up there before I started like really losing weight, and then ultimately ended up being anorexic and then bulimic. and then after my accident, gained 110 pounds back again, and then I lost, and then I lost 90 of it, and now I'm just kind of like in a stasis of like constantly gaining and losing 25 pounds, because that's just my life, I've realized.
You're gorgeous.
That's the thing. Somebody actually said this. She has a beautiful face. I mean, she's a beautiful girl. And that's what people have always said. I'm not sitting here saying I have a beautiful face, but I have a face that carries weight well, and I have a frame that carries weight fairly well. You know, it's like I can put on like 25 pounds and people will be like, you're overweight right now. It's like, yeah, technically, you know, it's like I was, people can't really like, don't really notice that much because I am 5'9". But anyway, so I tweeted out that I've been anorexic, bulimic, and morbidly obese. This cover helps no one. Unhealthy skinny is just as bad as unhealthy heavy, and the latter is far more likely these days. Feel good about yourself, but make no mistake, this is just another version of unhealthy. And I feel like, you know, it's another one of those things where we talk about extremes. You know, it's like with the whole Me Too movement, we've gone from people, you know, women and even men being sexually harassed and abused, to where we have to believe all women is now the mantra, you know, if someone says that they were, you know, harassed or abused, even now being asked out on a date or asked for your number is being lumped in with harassment, you know, or rape and stuff like that. And it's like, that's not, now we've gone from women who are absolutely unhealthy on magazine covers being too skinny and too weight, you know, underweight, under a normal BMI, which I, honestly, the BMI thing, I cannot stand. I mean, when I was at my BMI weight, which is for 5'9", they say is like 140 pounds, I was a good 20. I was disgustingly sick. I mean, I was not only eating like a set amount of like vegetables and like lean protein, and I wouldn't eat anything outside of that set like group of foods because I was obsessed with like Glamour and like fitness magazines. I would read them all the time, and I would every month they come up with a new like, oh, here's a superfood and here's food you weren't supposed to eat, but here's the foods that you can eat. And every month it would make my foods that were, you know, supposedly good for me in a health magazine that's trying to make money every month. You know, they've got to come up with something new every month to sell. But Cosmo has a morbidly, and I get it, you know, but we have now swung into this thing of, oh, body positivity, and we all need to feel great about ourselves. And it's like, no, but you need to realize, like, that, you know, like, she's, you know, you're a worthwhile and worthy and valuable human being. But don't, you know, why can't we just put someone that's like, you know, 160 pounds and 5'8" on the cover, you know, which is the average woman, or 5'4".
Well, I think, well, I mean, those are all fantastic points. And I feel like when someone makes that great point saying that if you weigh like 80 pounds, sorry, that's not healthy. I don't care if you look wonderful on the cover of a magazine in that expensive outfit, it's not healthy. If you weigh as much as Tess Holliday, who, like you said, I think she's a gorgeous face, but it's not healthy. And for someone to point that out, people look at you and saying, oh, you're saying that they're worth less. No, you're not. Mm-hmm. You're saying that kind of standard where we've swung completely in the opposite direction is not good for society and the effect it has on women. I mean, I hate when women say, well, real women have curves. Well, not every woman looks the same. Not every woman has as sharp of curves as the next woman. Mm-hmm. And to say that real women look a certain way, whether skinny or, you know, incredibly overweight, it's wrong. And like you said, we should focus on health, and that looks different for everyone. And don't trust the BMI chart, because yes, they are crap. But why can't we focus on health and not use these kind of extreme models to say that this is what we should be celebrating right now, when it's absolutely what we shouldn't be?
Yeah, there's a thing called, I think it's AERIE, Aerie, and it's a hashtag and also a account on Instagram, and I think they're a company. I think they might be a underwear company for women, like bras and panties and stuff like that. And you know, they focus on not photoshopping pictures. And I know that Busy Phillips, has a very big Instagram following, and while she's, you know, when she gets into politics, I kind of like tune out, but because she's just she's typical Hollywood, surrounded by, you know, but her Instagram is great because like she talks about how she's one of those people that's like has a lot of moles, and she always says that she hates it when they Photoshop out her moles, because her moles are who she is, you know. And she also talks about, and she's a perfectly healthy sized woman, like she's not too thin, she's just perfectly fine, and she's one of those women that just has curves. But she talks about, you know, like here's the actual picture, and then here's the Photoshop picture, you know. And they always, yes, you know, kind of like smooth out arms and stuff like that, and those kinds of, you know, it's like you just think about like your body and things like that. And I always never wanted to, you know, blame Glamour and stuff like that, you know, and health magazine covers and things like that for my becoming anorexic. But I know that I was always trying to get, you know, like slim arm, you know. For some reason I became obsessed with like slim, my arms being slender, you know. And
I mean, it's
like
an influencer. Yeah, it really is.
Yeah. And so even though I think that even though, but I don't blame them, but at the same time, it's like, I did have this image of like, oh, look how slim her arms are. I guess I need my arms to be, and I need to get down however weight that is to not have any kind of excess flab on my arm. You know, it's like, which is just kind of like a ridiculous standard. But well, we have talked it up, Kim, but I want you to, tell everybody about your big thing with Washington Examiner so that they buy the magazine.
Oh, yes. A piece I wrote this past week, which I won't tell you what piece, but it's a piece I wrote for Washington Examiner, will be published in their Tuesday edition of their magazine, which they have a weekly magazine. So I'm really excited to see that in print.
Yeah. So probably like what, Barnes & Noble, or just like a news?
Maybe Barnes & Noble. I think you might have to subscribe to get the magazine, but either way.
So if you haven't subscribed yet, you probably can't get it.
You should. Yeah. But I'm really excited about that.
So yeah, because you'll probably be in there again. So, yeah, I'm not sure how much a Washington Examiner subscription is, but everybody out there, Kim will be in it probably more than once. So
I hope so.
All right. And where can everybody reach you if they don't already know?
You can find me on the questionable world of Twitter, which we're not sure what that's going to look like in the future, at Southern Keeks, K-E-E-K-S, at Red State and Washington Examiner.
All right. And you can find me on Twitter at Andrea and Ruth and at Red State. And we'll see you next time on another episode of The Right Side. Bye.